Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, presented by Curation CBD. Curation CBD, products curated for life. You know that music. Every day, Monday through Friday, from 2 to 6 on 94.9 is where you can hear our next guest and his fantastic show. Paul Feinbaum joins us every week, and he's brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. Paul, we were just talking about Peyton and Eli. They're getting so much attention for these Monday night broadcasts now, 2 weeks in a row. I don't know how much NFL you watch or if you watch any at all, but have you been able to check out Peyton and Eli on ESPN too?
Yeah, I've watched some of both, and you're right. This is not a new thing. This has been going on for some time, probably at least 7 or 8 years with MegaCast. And
yep.
I've done a few. We've done SEC games before. We've done the semis and the national championship. And I do think the public has adapted. Now, there's never been anything quite Peyton and Eli. I've had a group of analysts together that are all fun and well-known, but not exactly these guys. And I wonder, because I flipped over back and forth, I mean, the game sounds rather mundane after watching this.
I'm with you, and I've just admitted that. Like, I did back and forth the first week. I found, maybe the Lions played a factor. I just really didn't have any interest. This is the only way I could watch a Lions game. But I found myself last night, Paul, only watching the game through, listen to Peyton and Eli. Just give their, like I said, icing the kicker. Though that was a great conversation. And Gronk and McAfee and these. I don't know. If you're going to endure a Lions game, to me, that's the only way you do it. And I enjoyed it.
Well, very few people now watch a game entirely with their eyes on the game. And what I mean by that is a lot of us, and it's not just media people, but it's obviously fans want to participate, so they're holding their phone or their iPad, and they're tweeting or they're doing whatever. So it's just a new world. We all have a spot or a role in the broadcast. And yeah, and I listen. It's a little bit awkward me commenting on my own network's broadcast, but I don't think the media spends so much time analyzing on the broadcasters. I don't really care. In fact, I was watching a game Saturday where the broadcasters did nothing but annoy me, and I won't mention which one it was. It was only the highest rated game on Saturday afternoon.
Thank you. I was going to ask you, please tell. I'll figure it out on my own.
By the way, involved the number one team in the country, if that's a clue, okay?
So, okay, let's go there. I admitted yesterday that, I checked out in the second quarter when the second quarter started, I was like, there's just other options. Like, this is just another Alabama game, and they're going to blow the doors off Florida, and it's going to be another non-eventful Crimson Tide game. So I checked out for a while, and then I realized, oh, wait a minute, Florida's got some fight. And then I watched the entire second half, and I had to admit, I did not expect it to be a game. So what was your takeaway from a game that, quite honestly, if you watched it, I think Florida, if you put aside the first quarter, I think they were the better team the rest of the way, or is that getting a little too crazy?
No, I felt the same way. And by the way, my situation was even more complicated since I was in Gainesville Saturday morning for a show. And you always think, okay, is this – I mean, I work Sunday morning for ESPN, so I do need to get out of there and start making my way back. But every once in a while, I'll stay. And I didn't really – by the time my plane took off from Gainesville, the game was over. And then I landed, and I'm thinking – I mean, I need to put this phone down for a second, but I couldn't because you could feel it. You could feel this happening. And I think Alabama just, tried to give the game away. They lost focus. They probably should have lost. And you're right about what you said. Now, I'll try to avoid the most basic cliches that we learn at an early age that it is a 60-minute game. For Alabama, thank goodness it was, because they were so good early and so bad late that you do have to wonder about them moving forward. And yesterday on our program, we had Alabama fans calling for the firing of the defensive coordinator, the firing of the offensive coordinator. And I was thrilled to death because that's, I mean, you don't get that very often from an Alabama fan. But, and it comes down to this. Alabama fans lost a lot of money on this game. They cannot bet on the other team. So they all took Alabama minus 14 and got run over.
Yeah, that's interesting and not surprised at all. So they could not run the ball, Paul. Is that an anomaly or is that cause for concern moving forward that Alabama just doesn't have their typical horses in the backfield like they've had in the past?
Well, we always hear, it doesn't matter who the new running back is, he's better than the last guy. Well, the last guy was Najee Harris, who was the best running back in the country. And he's not better than him. And the offensive line looked pedestrian, and the defensive line looked even worse. And I don't want to jump to too many conclusions because – this week Alabama's a 44-point favorite over Southern Miss, so I won't waste time. But the next 2 weeks, the Alabama season will be in the balance. They're playing Ole Miss at home and A&M on the road. And I can tell you, Lane Kiffin is just rubbing his hands together, going, I cannot wait to get to Tuscaloosa and try my magic. So I don't know. I mean, I think Nick Saban, in a way, likes the fact that they got out of there, and you know that he's got their attention. He did not have their attention after the first game, and we all read too much into it. Miami's not a good team,
no.
And I think we came to a. I mean, 2 weeks ago today, we were talking about the season being over. So I mean, I think college football fans are rejoicing that Alabama looked vulnerable, and I'm not too upset about it myself.
So we've all talked about, and I know you've talked about in your show, right, the effect of playing Alabama and what it does to a team the following week. And typically Alabama can beat teams up, and, there's deficiencies. They lose guys to injuries and just the whole mentality. They can beat you down. So with that being said, I don't know. I mean, it may work just the opposite for Florida. They have something to build off of because, yeah, it wasn't a win, but – they hung in there and they got everybody's attention and said, heck, they went toe-to-toe with Alabama and lost a close one. So with that being said, now they're going to turn around right back at home again and host Tennessee and have to get up for that Saturday night in the Swamp. How do you see that one playing out?
I don't think the normal conventional wisdom will apply here because I agree. Florida, I think, does have a lot to prove. They felt like they won the game in the public's mind. And I do think it's a slight advantage for that game to be at night. It gives them a little more time to think about it versus, let's say, a noon game where they might be hungover. So I don't think it sets up well for Tennessee at all. I did not see any of Tennessee's game against Cookeville High School they were playing the other day. So I'm not going to burden you with that, but I just think Tennessee's coming in there with uncertainty at quarterback, uncertainty across the board, and I know that Dan Mullen will try to sell the audience and Josh Heupel on what a great rivalry this is. This is not even a rivalry any longer. This was a rivalry, and I don't even know what is the line.
Three touchdowns.
Yeah, and that. I don't think Tennessee will just get destroyed, but I don't see them making this game interesting either.
Talking to Paul Feinbaum, and by the way, Elijah Campbell, a Cookeville High School graduate, so he was pumped up that you made the Cookeville High reference.
The Fighting Mac Browns.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been to Tennessee Tech, so I'm not sitting here like saying it's a bad place. It's not. It's a great place, but they have a terrible football team.
They're not very good right now. Paul, I want to ask you before we leave the subject of the Gators. You did have a great stare down with an alligator on the set the other day. Tell us how that developed. That was pretty good. That's pretty good video right there.
Yeah, and so every year we go to Gainesville, and every year somebody from some gator farm or whatever shows up. And this guy walked into our meeting, acting like, he was, doing the 2021 version of Crocodile Dundee. And And I really just didn't care. I mean, I'm really officially bored with Gators. I've looked at Gators. I've talked to Gators, blah, blah, blah. So finally the guy shows up on our set, and he puts the Gator down on the table without, you know, and lets him go. And I'm like, well, you know, screw this Gator. I got down, and I tapped the table, which I will tell you, it seemed to rattle the Gator. Usually Gators are used to people being scared. So I kind of got, as I put my head closer to him, I'm thinking he's probably going to snap and I'm going to move back. And I got very close to him. I cannot explain why I did it. It was not planned. It was not in the script. The producers were like screaming, get away from the Gator. Tebow was like saying, back up. But what I didn't understand is that Gators don't snap. Their first move, I found this out later, their first move is to race forward and then snap once they have their hands around your neck. And I did get a little nauseous when I realized that's how the Gators operate. So the moral of the story is don't challenge a Gator to a fight unless you know how they operate. The good news is the Gator did back up a little bit. The better news is I did not lose my nose. Although, I think deep down the producers were, you know, thinking that would have been the viral moment of the century if his Gator had Paul Feinbaum wrapped, or, you know, with his legs and arms wrapped around his neck while he's chewing on his nose and blood is spurting everywhere. But I mean, it's funny to talk about, but I know you guys would have been sympathetic and would have probably sent me a get well card.
Oh, they care about you, Paul, but they care more about the ratings bonanza. So they were probably rooting for B. Yeah, you're right.
Looking for something viral. Yes, it was close, though. I mean, still, the stare down, it got a certain amount of attention, for sure. We're just glad you're talking.
I did get rather close to the Gator.
You did.
I think that will be it for a while. Everybody's been in that moment, whether it's on your show or on television. You just do lose a little bit of a sense of reality. You think the camera will protect you with a live animal. It won't.
It will not. Paul, you've got Georgia coming into Nashville this weekend. Vanderbilt, unfortunately, has lost their best tailback, who was running really well against Stanford before he got hurt. So, it obviously, Georgia's a huge favorite. I want to ask you about where you think Georgia is right now in their development and in their quest to catch Alabama, win a national title, et cetera.
It's very possible Georgia's the best team in the country right now. Their defense is just suffocating. The offense, I still think, is evolving. And, you know, this is one of those games you expect to see a lot out of them. But I don't know. I'm not sure what we'll see from Georgia. I've been to some Georgia Vanderbilt games, as you guys have, and sometimes Georgia does tend to play down a little bit to the opposition. I don't think it will be close, but I also don't think Kirby Smart is looking just to put a number on the board. I think he just wants to get out of there. There's still a little bitterness from last year. I've heard from Georgia people. They felt like Vandy just canceled on them. I'm sure you guys remember the controversy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't see that carrying over. I don't really think the players care about that now. But I was sorry to see Vandy lose. I thought a two-game winning streak would have been epic. But I do think Vanderbilt has a good chance to go 2-10 this year.
Well, they've got UConn after Georgia, so that's the one they've got to have. And then, of course, we'll see how they do against more of the middle-of-the-road SEC teams. That will be a marker to see how much progress they're making. So, Paul, speaking of middle-of-the-road in the SEC, you had an interesting interview with Greg McElroy regarding Penn State, who got a big win over Auburn. A lot of goofy calls, crazy punts on third down, crazy stuff. And, of course, speaking of Vanderbilt, you had James Franklin versus Derek Mason, which, you know, a lot of people were watching with some interest there. But Greg McElroy made the statement, as good as Penn State is, he has them in the middle of the SEC, fourth in the West, third in the East. Do you agree?
I do. McElroy said that yesterday. By the way, that's not really people think that was a shot at Penn State. That's just their compliment to the SEC. They're not better than Florida or Georgia in the East. And, you know, are they better than Alabama, Ole Miss, A&M? I don't think so. I think they have a good team. Now, we all know Auburn lost to them, but Auburn really was in that game. And they had some inexplicable plays down the stretch that cost them the game. But I don't think that Penn State people are really upset about that crack by McElroy. But this is a team that survived Wisconsin in the opening weekend in one of the ugliest games I've ever seen. And they survived Auburn in the famed whiteout, and even if they win the Big Ten, I don't think they're going to scare anybody really good like Alabama, or Oregon, or Georgia. So I think that's a pretty fair analysis.
Want to ask you real quick before we let you go about the goofy play involving Memphis and Mississippi State. Of course, Mississippi State has been playing with fire. They had a Houdini act to win their first game. They almost pulled it off again. But, of course, it's a key play that the SEC admits they got wrong. Give us your thoughts on that play, on the punt, where the guy comes in and he's blowing the play dead. He's signaling that the play is over. But by rule, the guy is allowed to go and pick the ball up. A screw-up there.
Yeah, I think it is a screw-up. But on the other hand, I was more impressed by the Memphis player. I mean, that was brilliant. I mean, you see guys do that sometime and they somewhat walk it out, but this guy, he was not thinking about anything other than grabbing the ball, and I can't get too upset about that. I mean, Mississippi State needs to move on. They really have the biggest game of the year coming up this Saturday. And by the way, I think both teams, you could say this about both teams, LSU and Mississippi State. I mean, I don't think it's a game that any of us are going on StubHub and trying to grab tickets for, but you do not want to be the losing coach in this game. I'm just going to make that proclamation right now, because if it's Ed Orgeron, he suddenly has seen the season just implode on him already. He lost to Mississippi State a year ago, and Mike Leach, he does not really generate a lot of confidence when he whines and mopes around these post game press conferences. So I am really curious about this one, regardless of how bad that call was last week.
Yeah. Real quick, and I should have worked this in at the beginning. We were talking about Peyton and Eli. Did you see where Lane Kiffin said he wanted those guys to do the Ole Miss-Tennessee game?
That's good.
I
think it would be a great idea.
It's not a bad idea.
Yeah, it really is not. I don't know whether I'm assuming – well, I'm not assuming anything. That game will be an ESPN game because I can promise you CBS won't want that game. And I don't know if Peyton and Eli, will have to go back and renegotiate one more game, but that would be hilarious though.
That would be fantastic.
I hope it happens. I think you could even get Peyton to leave his kitchen to go to that game.
I don't know. Looks pretty cozy where he is. We'll
it
see.
Does.
Hey, Paul, thank you for the visit. As always, have a great rest of your week and great shows, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
All right, that is Paul Feinbaum, brought to you by MTGRT.com, your live and local mortgage expert. A lot of good stuff in there. We'll come back. More on the other side as you listen to Darren Dunnick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.